Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Always a delight, and we are pleased to. We're gonna talk about a lot of different stories today. We have a lot going on, and we will get right to it. Let me introduce the panel to you. We haven't seen you in a long time, and it's been too long.
Winston.
Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And it's only our fault. You have been readily available, but we just it's nice. I guess the last time I asked you, you were busy, and then it was nice that you were able to fill in today. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's always good to have you here.
We like you because you're your own man, and because you can sometimes take a conservative view of things.
Oh, you want me to do that today?
Yeah, could you play that? Oh.
I will.
This may not be, by the way,
I'll play the
Honan verdict.
Oh, yeah, what? What?
How much we love and appreciate him.
Oh, only because he wrote a Thanksgiving column which cast you in a bad light.
Terrible.
It's not welcoming.
Is that how you treat your relatives on Thanksgiving?
Yes, that's how I treat my relatives on Thanksgiving. I voted for Trump.
Rosemary Armeo is here, in case you couldn't tell. She is here, and she is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany, and always very nice to have Rosemary here. We welcome you, even if you don't welcome Pork Russ.
Okay.
All right. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Let's talk Fun Drive. Let's talk. It all begins. Rosemary just reminded me that the Fun Drive starts on Monday, and I said, it is? It does? So it.
Seriously, you didn't know that after all of our meetings?
What I try to do is to put it all out of mind, you know, and then just sort of come in here.
Yep.
And that's right. And you're not even from Maine. So, so I would say that we have a new total, right?
We have a new total. You ready? I've got two totals for you here. I have, first of all, we had an amazing day yesterday.
We did.
It was almost $50,000 yesterday. So that brings, now don't forget, we set the lockbox goal to $633,000.
And why did we do that, Joe?
Because we wanted to put money away into our First Amendment fund to make sure that if the bad people come knocking on the door to take away the money from the radio station,
yeah,
that we would be protected, and also to be ready for whatever fight we may have to have down the line.
You never know who's gonna come after you and what thing. And you know, lawyers like Rich Honan, he told us yesterday he's $400 an hour. But there are other people who are $1,000. There's a column for you, Chris.
Were we supposed
Churchill
to mention that?
I don't know.
I don't know that we were supposed to mention that, but that's all right.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's okay.
You didn't say it on the air?
No.
Oh, boy.
No,
apologize.
I said that to you off air, but that's okay.
You didn't hear that, people.
Disregard.
Purge it out.
Rewind.
Yeah, but there are $1,000 an hour lawyers. You know that?
Now,
there's a column for you, Chris Churchill. You know, how much lawyers charge? And if it's an hour, do they think about your case while they're riding down the road, driving to the theater? Is that $1,000 right there as opposed to
sitting at
the desk?
I would say you do, sure. Yeah,
definitely.
They're thinking about your case.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever noticed that there are certain politicians who don't want to be, who want to be seen of the people? So they leave the G off the words. So like, and we have one congressman who does a lot. I'm not going to name names.
So here, instead of I'm bringing her to the meeting,
that's
it's
right.
Bringing.
I'm bringing her. I'm thinking about it.
Thinking about it.
And that would put you into the.
It makes you a common man.
A common man.
Yeah.
Not a communist.
So one thing that we've gotten a couple letters, and I just want to clarify this. You know, people will say, oh, this is a so we got a letter, a very nice letter from a very nice person.
Not really.
that this was a knee-jerk reaction to a threat from the Trump administration, the First Amendment Fund. And I think
it's
important
not.
For us to clarify that we have had a First Amendment Fund for almost 17 years here, which has been for, because whenever a new administration comes in, often a Republican administration, there are threats to public broadcasting. And so that was many years ago. Alan had the wisdom and forethought to say, well, okay, we have to set up something to
to protect ourselves from what's coming down the bend. So this is not a knee-jerk reaction. This is something we have had it in place for a very long time.
And not only that, Joe, you make a very good point, because such august institutions as Current Magazine, the voice of our industry,
yes,
has had major news columns on this, as, by the way, have The Hill, you know, in Washington, D.C., and other places who keep their ears to the ground. Yeah. What do you lose? You have enough so that if they are going to come after you, which they say they are, then you're in business.
They're having a fight with Australia. Do you think they're really not going to have a fight with us? So anyway, $586,393 is where we are to get to the $633 goal. That brings us, Alan, to $46,607, which means...
What does that mean?
Here's what this means. Okay. This is a little bit of fantastical thinking, but here's what this means. That if we have a day like we had yesterday, we'd make it.
You mean just today?
Yeah.
Now, if everybody got their behinds or
which
their,
they did
their
yesterday, and they do that again today.
Yeah, then we're there.
We're there.
Then we've made it.
Right.
And by the way, just a second to thank everybody, uncharacteristically of our fooling around. Thank everybody who's put all this money in. How much is in now?
$586,393, and that's for the $633 goal. And then just so you know that when we begin the fund drive, so any money that goes over that will obviously go toward the fund drive total. And then when we hit, assuming we make this goal, you're looking at $500,000. We're more than halfway through, so that's great.
And who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
It's who would really have ever amazing. Thunk that this possible?
This fast. And,
I'm thinking about it.
So, really, 46,000 just today, and we'll have this. So do what you can. Be as loving and generous as you have been. And it's very, very important. We'll be talking about it more throughout the morning, but I just want to...
So 46 is what we need now?
Yes, $46,607.
Wow. That's
pretty amazing,
great.
Isn't it?
No, that's great. That's
really great. All right. So WAMC.org. We also have we're talking about the First Amendment. It goes into the First Amendment fund. We have a First Amendment t-shirt. We have a First Amendment mug. You can get both of them for $150. You can get either one separately for $100. 1-800-323-9262. The front office is ready for your call. Press 0. They'll take your pledge. Or, better yet, to save them so they can actually do their real work, their real jobs, WAMC.org.
Yeah, it's a good way to go. We had a letter from a guy saying, you know, just because they're going to take the money away from WAMC doesn't have a thing to do with the First Amendment. This is a good guy, by the way, somebody who really loves the station. And I said, no, it does. It's the spirit of the First Amendment. I think it's what we've learned.
Well, I was struck by that letter because and you've pointed this out, Alan, in your commentary here, but also on the air, which is in our conversations about, well, you have Steve Bannon telling the press to shut up. Well, isn't that a First Amendment issue?
I would think so.
If you're telling a press organization to just shut up and watch, that seems to me like that is perhaps an issue that involves the First Amendment.
I would say.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be back and we'll start the show. We'll get everybody all riled up even more. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Howard Schaefer Media Marketing, public relations services for print, electronic, and digital media. Howard Schaefer Media Marketing, news development, interview prep, we put you in the news. hsmediamarketing.com. Traditions Linens Factory Outlet Claverick, everything for bed, bath, and home crafted by local artisan sewers. Traditionslinens.com. And Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, offering degrees in entrepreneurial business, environmental science, culinary arts, hospitality, recreation, and many more, and experiential education with hands-on academics. paulsmiths.edu.
Good morning. Welcome back. There's a lot to talk about, and we'll start. We basically said yesterday we put Iran on notice. We said that we could possibly send in troops to Mexico to take care of the bad hombres. And apparently we had a very not-so-nice phone call with the leader of Australia, one of our staunchest allies, and which ended up with the worst call by far is how President Trump clarified it. Malcolm Turnbull says he hung up on the president. The president says he hung up on Turnbull, so I don't know exactly. But there are few details coming out from the Australian side. And at one point, Trump informed Turnbull that he had spoken with four other world leaders that day, including Russian President Vladimir Putin. And this was the worst phone call by far. Turnbull says that he offered apparently President Trump blasted Turnbull over a refugee agreement and boasted about the magnitude of his Electoral College win, according to senior U.S. officials briefed on the Saturday exchange. Then, 25 minutes into what was expected to be an hour-long call, Trump abruptly ended it.
So do you think that Trump probably found out about that refugee deal right before he made the phone call? I mean, it kind of sounds that way, like he was...
Right after he found out that Frederick Douglass was no longer alive.
You mean like he was unprepared and didn't check with the State Department first?
Well, it just seems like that. It seems like that. Yeah. That's what he was grumpy about, right? I mean, he just announced a refugee ban, and then he suddenly finds out, oh, we're taking 1,500 refugees from
Australia.
That's
interesting, because there is a line in the ban that says there's exclusions for places where we have an international agreement. Mm-hmm. Was that not in the ban when he talked to the prime minister or to the president, and then he put it in later? Or was that in at first? It seems
I have
like
to
a
check. Yeah,
yeah. That would be very interesting to know. Actually,
I think we have had questions. I know I vividly remember a listener letter that we had. I think late last week. It's all starting to blur right now. There's so much stuff coming out day after day. But the listener said, isn't it concerning that we're having this these diplomatic policy discussions so publicly, and the fact that we would that there would be a statement that would say that this is the worst call by far, that can't help diplomatic relations, I would think. But also, more to the point, I mean, maybe it isn't to the point, Rosemary. You can you can tell me how you feel about this. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be some question as how this came out. The Australians have been very tight-lipped. There are some questions as to Trump is blaming the news media, of course, and yet it seems like the leak came from his office, right? Mm-hmm.
There have been plenty of leaks from his office.
Yeah.
The New Yorker magazine commented on that last week, that there are senior officials in the White House. Senior people, his closest circle, are leaking all kinds of negative press. And so my personal opinion is it's Pence. He's trying to make him look crazy.
You think he's trying to make him look crazy, or you think he's playing to the base? Because the base, his base is going to love this. I mean, if they're leaking this stuff out, it could be entirely intentional.
I stood up to him. I didn't take anything even from this guy. You know, that's true. That could be.
So if that is true, how does Trump, Bannon, Conway react to that possibility that Pence is leaking this information, if that is true?
What do you mean, how do they react?
Well, I mean, wouldn't that tick you off?
But you're assuming that they don't want it leaked, and I would think that maybe they do.
I actually was referring to the stuff that was coming out last week about how, you know, unhinged he is.
Right.
And the whole thing.
Spicer, and he didn't like his tie and all that. But this stuff, Chris is right. This he doesn't see as a bad thing. He thinks he's being a big tough guy. He's giving his base what he promised he would. I'm going to stand tough. I'm going to make better deals for the United States. And he's portraying this as a horrible deal that Obama made. So you're right.
And it is going to play to the base, because these are 1,500 people that Australia refused to take, and that Obama apparently agreed to take.
No,
and people are going to question that, for sure.
And of course, Australia has taken all of these people who have this terrible, they're fleeing this terrible situation. And it's taken them to set up a couple of islands, as I understand.
Right, but won't let them into the country.
And, yeah. And can
well,
I?
But at least the gives them a place to go.
I point out that the U.S. agreement does not take them in. It agrees to put them into the vetting system, which actually, despite Trump's BS, does exist, and it's very rigorous. And all the agreement would require is that the U.S. put these people in, 1,200 people, not the 2,000 that Trump keeps talking about, and see if they can pass. If they don't pass, they don't come in.
Mm-hmm.
We got plenty
of room. I thought you were going to say more.
No,
okay. So what do you make of, so let's just go on the heels of that with what it means to put Iran on notice.
No idea.
So they fire a missile, right? And
ballistic missile, and they
get put on notice. Now, Trump knows that one of the things that Obama had a problem with was putting a line in the sand and then not adhering
backing
to it.
Off.
So I just want to quickly clarify, Alan, that it was National Security Advisor Michael Flynn that said that, putting them on notice.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to believe that if somebody's the head of the, you know, of the administration, that they're not in touch with it. So either they're in touch with what's been said on their behalf or they're not. Either way, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Either way, it's not right.
But what does it mean?
I don't know what it means. But and what does it mean to have so many disagreements going on in so many different directions? I mean, there's Mexico, Australia. Yeah, we're only 2 weeks in, and already it's like us against the world.
I made a list. Yeah. There's 7 countries in the ban. There's Mexico. There's China, of course. That was his first one. And now Australia. What the heck?
It's a list.
Mm-hmm. But not Russia. Russia's not on the list.
No, Russia's on the happy list. And Israel, too.
On Thursday, Trump reiterated his administration's warning to Iran, putting in a tweet that Tehran was formally put on notice for firing a ballistic missile. A top advisor to Iran's supreme leader also fired back, saying that the American government will understand that threatening Iran is useless. According to Reuters, this is not the first time that an inexperienced person has threatened Iran. According to the advisor, Iran does not need permission from any country to defend itself.
Well, the only issue that I think we're all sort of hinting at here is if you draw that line in the sand and they don't adhere to the line, are you going to take steps? And what would those steps be? Would they involve a missile of your own? Would they involve troops? I mean, what is it that you could possibly use as a sanction?
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get some letters. We'll talk about many other issues and hear more from our panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Chris Churchill. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Help the lockbox, too, WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We got you all riled up.
I have to go. I may not be able to. Alan's just saying stupid stuff.
No.
And you let him get away with it in the break.
Okay. Look. I don't. He was.
He barely spoke.
He said like three words.
Children.
All right. We have a lot of letters about stuff. We'll get to the letters, and then that'll help us move forward in the conversation to talk about other stuff as the time goes on.
But two points. One, you got to keep the letters short. You know, a sentence or two. You can say anything you want in a sentence or two. Don't give us a Megillah. Okay, that's number one. And number two, sometimes you want, you know, you think you can fool us by using teensy little type. And then using, you know, having a lot of words. Forget that. We're smart. We're not going to do that.
Well, that's right. So if you want them read and you want them to be shared with others, keep them short. We say 140 characters, which is just shorthand for saying keep it short.
Yeah.
Also, we're not counting, but still we know. The other thing, too, is no links. People are sending us link after link. We can't open them on the radio. People can't see them. We can't share them. So unless we won't do them during the show. If you want to send them to Rosemary, she opens and reads them. But other than that.
Richard
of North River. It's like nobody ever heard us say, no links. Here's a huge link. We're not going to read it. Okay, Just so you'll know that.
Okay, you got those.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Joe.
All right, there you go.
Thanks, Joe. Patrick says, it is ironic that UC Berkeley was known for starting the free speech movement in the 1960s, yes, but has now become a center of limited speech, in quotes. One way to satisfy the need to let everyone present their views, no matter how objectionable they are, is to have a debate format with one speaker presenting fringe ideas who can then be countered by another speaker with more moderate views, and that's from Patrick.
So that is in relation to the violence that erupted last night at UC Berkeley, where the protest took place. Right-wing commentator Milo Yiannopoulos, am I pronouncing that correct?
I think so.
Was ready to speak, and 150 masked agitators for the unrest, as they're calling themselves, disturbed the protest, and administrators decided to cancel the event about 2 hours before. And
not good.
We should note that Milo Yiannopoulos is a editor for Breitbart.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing is, it's not clear if they were students or who they were.
Right.
But at the same time, it is kind of embarrassing that the guy can't even talk, you know, free speech.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that, but I have one question. Who was that masked man? All right.
Who were those 150 masked men?
And women.
I didn't get the masked man.
And not only that, but if you watch some of the video, there's shots of them trying to break windows and being unable to do it. It's like, come on, practice before you get there, you know? I mean, they keep pounding on the window, pounding.
Work out a little bit more.
I saw, there was a woman, I think, with a flag. She was trying to break a window, and she couldn't do it, so she handed the flag to somebody else, and then he couldn't do it. The whole
thing. Well, maybe they have powerful windows at UC Berkeley. I guess, actually.
They did break some of them. They did manage to break some of them.
Rosemary.
No,
Rosemary.
I don't disagree with any of this. I think you let everybody speak. You yell at them and scream, sort of like we do here in the roundtable, but you don't stop the speech.
Well,
it's
you can protest. There's nothing wrong with protesting.
At a college campus, let me point that out, too. It's not just it is the place that the free speech movement began, but that's the place where dissident views, where unpopular views, where all views should be aired and discussed and talked about and put down and protested. But to just stop it, I think it's awful, and we all lose when that happens.
And also, six people were injured, we should note. So that's not a good scene.
No. Well, Rosemary, when I said, who is that masked man? And you said, I don't get that.
I didn't get what that had
How
to
old
do.
Are you? I mean, that's the Lone Ranger.
Well,
that's
66.
Not a masked man. That's the Lone Ranger.
I know it's the Lone Ranger. What does that have to do with Milo and the protest?
Because they were all wearing masks. Who was that masked man? Don't you see? Okay. David says, if you see Burke...
I think I need a Fire Island story here. They don't make sense to me.
We all know who the masked man was.
By the way, when they say we don't fact-check this program, I just want you to know we did. We fact-checked that.
Okay. David said, if UC Berkeley does not allow free speech and practices violence on innocent people with a different point of view, no federal...
We read that one. Yep.
Well, we read it twice. Okay, now, Mike says, I suspect that Neil Gorsuch will be confirmed to the Supreme Court. He would be replacing Antonin Scalia, one for one. The real battle will come when someone like Anthony Kennedy or Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Stephen Breyer decides to retire. Then... the balance in the court could be flipped permanently. No, I think it could be flipped with one vote, but that's yesterday's conversation, fight between Rosemary and I.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You want to revisit that?
No. Good morning, panel. At what point are the media, our legislators, and basically everyone going to stop pretending that a coup hasn't happened and that our country is quickly becoming a fascist regime? And that the checks and balances our government has in place are not, in capital letters, sufficient to succumb this frightening slide. We need to agree to accept that this is happening ASAP and galvanize and regroup in a substantially different way and figure out how to take back our country and save our democracy. And that's from Sharon.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. Good morning.
mumble.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Day after day, it becomes apparent that Pence is Svengali and Bannon is Rasputin and that the middle is Tweeter Trump. Together, they are the three stooges of the apocalypse. And in their dust is the group
of the only interested
in myself cabinet. Primarily men who don't give a damn about the American public. This is unacceptable. It is so important that all Democrats get out and vote in 2 years in order to wipe out as many Republicans off the board as possible. I want to repeat one more time that the people who are in bad shape for the next election of the Democrats because they have a lot more seats next time to defend than the Republicans do. This was the time to do it, and it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, Adam says, could the Senate Dems negotiate an amendment that in some way would disallow the kind of obstruction that successfully stole Obama's SCOTUS appointment in the future, forcing the Senate to act within a given time frame? What, with this group of people? That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
All right. All right. And then here it says here from James, I feel good. Trump ordered the Dakota pipeline to be built, setting the stage for a confrontation which could make Standing Rock another wounded knee. Would this M-O-Y, man boy, order American troops to fire on the protesters? Yes. Would the troops obey him? No. Forcing him to use local police or volunteers. Along with other actions, this could be the spark that sets off a dangerous chain of events that threatens American democracy. I tell you right now, I wouldn't make any assumptions about what soldiers, you know, being told to do would do or not do. Would you? No.
No.
Okay, and that's what I got, Joe. That's
okay, very good. So let's move on to other topics.
All right.
And what else is making news? I do want to get to Betsy DeVos and the vote for education secretary. This was made a bit intriguing by the fact that two Republican senators, both women, said that they would not vote for, they would not support Betsy DeVos, putting some question into confirmation. Thank you very much, Chris. Senator Susan Collins, a Republican of Maine, and Lisa Murkowski, a Republican of Alaska, said yesterday that they intend to vote against the confirmation, giving Democrats two of at least three Republican votes that they would need to block her appointment. Rosemary.
There is one other senator this morning who appears to be Fisher. Susan Fisher appears to be on the edge.
She's a Republican.
Another Republican. DeVos,
where's she from?
I can't remember. I knew it. He'll do the little checking and come up. But
What was her name?
Fisher.
Fisher. Okay.
So it's very close. To me, it's amazing that it is this close. This is a candidate who is supremely unqualified. Leaders in the charter school program, which she is part of, you know, the movement should be defending her. You'd think, wow, we get our. They're even saying, no, she just doesn't know anything. Her confirmation hearing was appalling. She didn't know the answers to things. She's unread. She's unprepared. And she's really rich, and haven't looked at her, fully vetted her connections with money. She's a terrible candidate. You know, and I've said, okay, I think Gorsuch is a pretty good Supreme Court candidate. Why isn't Chuck Schumer in there doing some horse trading? Saying I'll give you Gorsuch, and you don't have to, you know, change the cloture rule, but get rid of, say, three of these horrible people on the cabinet.
He doesn't have any horses to trade, though.
I mean, he doesn't. You're right.
I mean, they have the Republicans can pretty much do what they want. So, you know.
So why should they? They gave us the most acceptable of the three, and now it's downhill after these others happen. You know, Rosemary, as having studied Congress for a long time, I'm very interested in the fact that these two heroic women stand up, Republicans, and say they're not going to vote for her. Now, I think if, in fact, they had a third at the time, they would have said so, because then you wouldn't have known who was the one that put you over.
Deb Fisher is a Republican senator from the state of Nebraska, hails from Omaha, and has said that we are drilling down a little deeper on some of the issues. She has been very forthcoming in her discussions with me and also with my staff.
Who's saying that?
Senator Fisher of Nebraska. She has said that she has great concern, and she differs on school choice issues from DeVos. And she said, my actions have always shown that I'm a strong supporter of public education, and I do break with my party when it comes to the issue of vouchers.
There you go. So it's awful that we have to see this as a vote of courage to stand up against a completely inappropriate candidate.
Well, but it is, isn't it? I mean, you know, you're standing up against a bully and a guy who doesn't like it when he's crossed, and who and so
he'll put up somebody worse, though. even if they stop DeVos.
I don't think that's always true. I mean, history shows us that what they do is they'll put, not always, but they put somebody up who is unacceptable, they try, and then they come up with something a little bit better.
I don't mean to be flip, but history, we can't go with that really anymore, can we?
No.
In this administration?
No.
I mean, because nothing seems to be following any plan or... any decorum or root,
pattern
that is traditional.
You're anything but flip.
Yeah, no,
speaking of which, could I have those pieces
Absolutely.
Of paper next to you?
Let me flip them on over to you.
Chris, we cut you off. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just, well, my only point was that it's interesting that both Susan Collins and Murkowski, they're both from rural states where school choice doesn't really have much resonance. You know, I mean, if you live in a place where there's only a few hundred people scattered over the landscape, school choice means nothing. There's not going to be any choice. The local public school is going to be the only option.
Yeah, but this is a huge fight. Always has been charter schools.
But there aren't any charter schools in rural Maine.
No.
Is the point that I'm making.
No,
where rural
although
Alaska.
If you go to Louisiana, where my son lives, to New Orleans, every single school is a charter school.
Mm, and it's a big success,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's better than
what was there before.
What they had. So yeah. Charter schools are an issue which many people take exception to. I have my own doubts about them, only because we need to put every dollar we can into public education and make it better.
I can tell you, though, that I've had a few occasions to talk to parents who send their kids to charter schools, and especially in occasions where those schools were about to close, and the parents are desperate to keep their kids in those schools.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very hard to be against charter schools when you actually talk to the parents who send their kids there, because for a lot of them, it's a lifeline, you know?
The educational studies, however, don't show great success at those schools. How do you reconcile that with the
It depends what you mean by great success, because you're talking about test scores, I assume.
Okay.
Well, the parents don't talk about test scores. They talk about their kid not being scared to go to school. They talk about, you know, a healthier lunch for their kid. They talk about anxiety issues and feeling that their kids are safe during the day. Mm. The parents, the test scores are secondary to all those things.
Yeah.
And they talk about the chaos of the local public school and how much better their kid is doing emotionally at the charter school.
That makes you think we should put more into those charter schools rather than make our public schools safe and feed kids, which seem pretty basic to me.
And better.
Well, is it either, first of all, it's, I don't know that it's an either or. And secondly, we've been talking about making public schools better in places like Albany for decades, and it's never happened.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back and continue with the letters and continue with conversation. We welcome your letters. Here are the rules. They're very simple. Send your letters to panel@wamc.org, not to any other email address, panel@wamc.org. Keep them short, no links, and be as nice as you possibly can. Goodbye. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill of the Times Union. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org.
You know, Joe, I love having Chris here because, you know, he gives you a different perspective. He's his own man, and he does that.
What's coming next?
You're only halfway through the show, but right now we're on your side. We really like having you here.
Rosemary isn't saying anything.
Okay. So Sean, do you want letters or not?
Please,
okay.
Please.
Sean said, hello, with a recent decision in the Jupiter golf course against Trump because he kept members' dues but banned them from the club, his tactics seem so obvious. Do what he wants and keep pushing regardless of the ethics or morals of it. You win, in capital letters. Ugh. John Stewart was right. He's exhausting. And that's from Sean. Well... you know, it's tough to get the top thing off the pile.
Yes.
You got to wet your finger. Do that. Okay. Alan is usually correct. However, he seems uninformed re Australia's policy towards refugees. Australia does not permit refugees to reach Australian soil. I know that. They are diverted to tiny Nauru and other country where living conditions are horrible. Australia pays these countries to warehouse these refugees. This policy has been universally condemned outside Australia and is a major sore point inside Australia. Get it? And I knew that. However, they are not. The Australians have at least provided a safer haven than where they were coming from. No?
Yes. And the deal with the United States was in part a way to relieve the situation that is horrible. The conditions in those camps are very extreme.
But the argument that the Trump people make, and I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with this, is why should we take their problem?
It isn't their problem. It is a worldwide problem.
No, but why aren't they participating in the solution then?
Who?
They
Australia.
Are. They are.
How are they?
We're taking half of them. The Australians are taking some.
And what are we doing? You could take Guantanamo and put people there or any other place and really be part of the solution. And we were. There are wonderful towns in Vermont and other places which are doing exactly the right thing.
Right. I'm not saying we shouldn't take refugees, but what the Trump people are going to say is, why are we taking refugees that Australia is refusing?
Oh, my God. They're not refusing them.
They are refusing them.
They cannot take them.
That letter
it's 1,200 people. It's nothing. 1,250 people.
So why can't Australia take them?
Well, but Australia is doing something, Chris.
No, they're not. They're keeping them on, just like the letter writer said, they're keeping them on these remote islands.
But they're not being put in places where they'll be killed. This is a different story.
Right, but that's entirely different than integrating them into your society and doing what we do with refugees and what other countries do with refugees.
Well, we're not doing it now. Right now we're being told not to by the president,
for the last few days, but I'm talking about over the last few years.
And that's good, and what's happening now is bad, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, Ursula says, you're forgetting all of Europe is on his bad list. Tusk? It says T-U-S-K.
Oh, Tusk.
Tusk.
Bad list?
I had to put us... The us in the same category as Russia and China as dangerous for the UE, and that's Ursula from Montgomery. And hi, panel. The warning to Iran is a prelude to what will happen when North Korea launches a missile. In both cases, it can be seen as recognition that Trump sees this as a form of aggression that, if continued, will merit aggression on his part. It has only just begun. And that's Greg in Cooperstown. Okay, Trump supporters, known for believing, quote, fake news and having collapsed the real media with their fake media, will likely continue to dig in their heels and defend Trump with each and every leak from his own White House, and that's from Rachel. Very good. Thank you, Rachel. Okay, and Susan says, drilling in the national parks, trashing Obamacare, destroying our diplomatic relationships. Next, they'll move to bolster the defense budget, figuring we'll need our money there. Try to read your letters before you send them. Trying not to freak out is getting more challenging by the day. Thank you for the work you do. We always know we can trust your word. And that's from Susan in Leverett. All right. And Susan in, we did that. Two in a row. Same thing. All right. Mary says, good morning, panel. Is it possible that Trump himself is responsible for the leaks, using them to distract us from a less inept objective? On audioboom.com yesterday, Jake Fuentes suggested that the administration deliberately testing the limits of governmental checks and balances to set up a self-serving, dangerous consolidation of power. That's from Mary. I want you folks to feel that you can just jump in at any moment that you like.
Well, we talked about the leaks potentially being, intentional.
We have many times. You're exactly right. Yeah. George, correct me if I'm mistaken, but weren't the lefties, you included, bashing Australia for excluding refugees, for forcing them into concentration camps on offshore islands just weeks ago, and now you're praising them this morning, and just because you see them as opposition to Trump? Let me just say, each of us have a different opinion. So cut out the you business. I don't remember my saying anything like it. I don't know if anybody else here did.
I've been looking. That's why I'm playing with my device, because I think Chris...
It's going over really well, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris brought up a good point, and we're just debating it without knowing the information, which is how many refugees has Australia taken in, and why have they not taken in more of these? There must be an answer, because Obama agreed to it. That was the deal we made, that we would take half of them, that we had the space, and we would do it. But I think that's a good point, and I don't know the answer to that.
But also,
Trump handled it badly.
Well, that's
and
it.
How about calling us a bunch of lefties? I don't like that.
what did you do?
How about them calling us a bunch of
the left? The letter calling us a bunch
of lefties.
Well, we are, and be proud of it. The left is much better than the right.
I never saw that they were going to even take half of them. I thought we were taking the full 2,500.
No, we're taking 1,250 people, according to the agreement that the United States signed.
That's right.
But the question you asked is, why isn't Australia taking all of them, taking all 2,000 or take 10,000 like Canada is? And I don't know the answer to that. I want to find that. I do know that 80% of the people in those camps who got there, by the way, by traveling in boats the way the Cuban people did, they're so desperate, 80% of them have been vetted already by the Australians, not our system, and we don't have to accept that as the word, but 80% of them have been judged to be legitimate refugees. These are not a bunch. It's not like emptying out Guantanamo.
But that raises the question you were just asking, which is, why is Australia not taking them in?
I am not responding, Chris, because I do not know the answer.
Yeah.
But I am looking for it.
Seth,
I think it's legitimate.
Seth says, you are out of your mind.
Who?
I don't know. I haven't finished the sentence yet. You are out of your mind if you object to protests over racist hate speech at UC Berkeley. Joke all you want. Trump and Bannon are moving hard and fast, and we are going to wake up in another country before we know it. Sorry, I say shut them down now.
Yeah, but not violently. And
I'm for free speech.
For free speech,
I'm for free speech. I think that's what a university is supposed to do.
But not for violence. And
yeah, and Milo is a more complicated figure than just, you know, he's not a Klansman, or, you know, he's gay for one thing, he's Jewish. He is a provocateur, and he does say very, very offensive things, but, you know, his view is not just pure. I don't want to sound like I'm defending him, because I'm
but
not.
But what's so dangerous about letting even a jerk?
Well, that's
speak?
True. That's true. But I mean, he was invited by the College Republicans. All I'm trying to say is they wouldn't have invited a Klansman or somebody, or a David Duke. He's a more complicated figure than that.
Hey, you never know. Well, I remember when I was a student at Hunter College, and lefties were not permitted to speak at the college. Now they name schools after them. So that's just the way it is. Yeah. Patrick says, he's a professional provocateur. I think it was all set up to promote his cause and the Trump agenda. I watched extensive footage and firmly believe this to be true. That's from Pat. All right. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
As soon as Trump mentioned America First, he stepped into motion an avalanche. He set into motion, so sorry, an avalanche of the world against U.S., just more kindling to fire up the Trump base, and that's from Anthony. Okay. And then from Adam, never, in capital letters, let fascists speak. This attitude of letting neo-Nazis and alt-righters become the new normal is what is leading us down the wrong path. Shut them down, Adam and Poughkeepsie.
But by quote-unquote shutting them down, they've made him much more famous this morning than he was yesterday. They've amplified his voice.
Without question. You are so right about that.
All right.
Changed my mind.
All right.
In reading about... Do we have time?
Australia? Can you make the announcement after the break?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So I'm going to use that as a teaser.
Okay.
Rosemary has changed her mind. We'll tell you how after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Chris Churchill. I promised that Rosemary could announce her changing of her mind. But before we do that, I just want to bring you up to date on the lockbox. We started this morning just over 585 and... already $5,000 in.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, which is, of course, great, but it's not enough, because here's what's happening. The Janie Fund has put up, $10,000?
$10,000.
If we can make this. And that's $10,000, by the way, that'll go right into the fund drive.
Yes.
So it'll bring down the fund drive total on the other side. So if everybody just took this to heart and said, can we do this now, that would be great.
Basically means that between us and that happening, yes, Alan, yes. $42,817. And we should note, we had almost a $50,000 day yesterday. So if everybody just did something right now, we could end this and get the money.
And
get the $10,000 and be well on our way to finishing the fund drive before we even begin at 6 o'clock on Monday morning.
And thanks to the Janie Fund, really. And thanks to all of you who have put so much money in already.
$10,000 on the line. Do what you can. WAMC.org. And we'll talk about that again, maybe even have a new total by the end of the show. Rosemary, tell me about your changing of the mind.
Okay, so I've done some research prompted by Chris. I give him credit for that. Australia is huge and vast, and it has lots of room, and it has a long, long history of keeping out Asians. It does not want its population to change. It doesn't want to change the character of the country. And this seems to be in line with that. So it's imprisoning all these, something like 4,000 migrants have drowned as hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands try to make their way to Australia to get out of Syria and Sudan and the other places where they are really destitute. So what the Australians have done is corralled them on these two little islands. The conditions are horrible. They've been condemned by all kinds of human rights groups. And they have Trump-like characters in government who are going through them in extreme vetting, and no one will get into Australia proper until they go through that process.
So was the Prime Minister of Australia wrong in insisting that Trump take in these 1,200 people?
No, he wasn't, because the United States made an agreement.
Yeah.
And even Trump admits to that. That's why there's that line, whether it came in before or after, saying if we agree to it, we have to do it. But the question is, why isn't Australia being pressured to take more refugees in the same way that we ought to? And that does not appear to have been done.
Well, Sean says Chris Churchill should stick around and change minds more often.
There's a good point to that.
And you have that.
What?
No, you have that pile.
Oh, this pile over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alan is right. Block the Supreme Court seats. An athlete competing against other athletes using performance drugs can't win. We must play it like the Republicans. A passive action by the Democrats will not help our morale and will result in a lack of voter turnout in upcoming elections. And that's from Lisa.
All very well and good. Democrats simply do not have the numbers to do what the Republicans did.
So it
may help your morale, but it isn't going to do a heck of a thing for the rest of the country.
Well, you know what, Rosemary? I think I don't agree with you, because while you are theoretically right that they don't have the votes to do it, there has to be a resistance. And I believe that these are all symbols of resistance, even if they don't win them. You see what I mean?
But what are they supposed to do exactly? Just delay?
They're supposed to do anything they want. Look,
they can't even
two and a half million people walked out on the streets the other day to protest. That was doing something. You say, what are they supposed to do?
Well, right,
that was something.
But that's not going to—that protesting is a great way to express displeasure, but that's not going to stop these nominees from going through.
No, but it'll show the American people. Look, Chris, let's all remember that Hillary Clinton got a lot more votes than Donald Trump. And apparently Donald Trump, in his conversation with the Australian when he was losing his cool, said, I had an overwhelming
electoral
victory.
He does like to mention that.
Yeah. We're talking about two different things. One is protesting in the street by citizens as a resistance. Not only do I approve of that, I've been part of it, but we're talking about congressional, what the senators and the Democratic representatives can do. And that is very little. They cannot delay. We saw that with the cabinet confirmations yesterday. They can be against Gorsuch, but they don't have the votes if McConnell changes the rules. There's nothing they can do with that strategy of symbolic resistance. I'd sure like to see smart old Chuck Schumer come up with something that might work.
Well, James says, Chris is a rational conservative.
I don't know that.
I love him. I'm independent. Was going to vote Clinton until I heard his conservative briefs.
Which of those words do you take greater exception to? Rational or conservative, by the way?
I don't know. I don't like labels. And rational, I'll take.
I was going to vote for Clinton until I heard his conservative briefs and realized how crazy her and liberal views are. Go, Chris. Go, Ray. Send from my iPod. Okay. And then how much do you have to donate to buy a day a week to discuss issues other than Trump? And that's from Susan.
Like what, Susan? What would you like us to discuss?
The weather. It's cold out.
It's very cold. Wow, it's February now in New York.
I mean,
it's
cold. The flip answer is, it seems like the end of the world is an important thing to discuss, right? I mean, that's the flip answer. But, yeah, I don't know. When you start looking
through, comes down to Trump. It does.
Right. I mean,
look at the pile of emails you have right there, too.
We're talking about our nuclear capabilities. We're talking about Iran. We're talking about health care. We're talking about guns. We're talking about the Supreme Court. I mean, these, I don't know. Yes, he is entwined with every single solitary one of them, but that's what we're talking about. I mean, we're talking about education. It's a wide range of issues.
And finally, I want to say, Joe, and much of this is due to you and how you arrange all of this. But we have we have an incredible number of people listening to this program, and they are very bright, as you can see evidenced from these letters that we've been getting.
You know, I think the letter that you just read, though, I really do. You know, you look for articles of other things. I think yesterday I sent like 10 things because I there was one thing I sent of like Oprah's going to be a part of 60 Minutes. I thought, well, that would be an interesting discussion. But after you get to all of this stuff, nobody cares about that anymore. I mean, it's like it doesn't matter anymore.
And it seems like everything ends up tying back to Trump anyways. I mean, we could talk about that protest at UBerkeley yesterday, but the protest was largely about Trump.
It's about Breitbart. I mean, it's fueled by Bannon and his inclusion.
We're not doing dog stories. Promise me.
Well, there was no that cute dog in there. There was that cute dog in there.
Oh.
Well,
we used to have a lot of cute dogs out on Fire Island, Rosemary.
I don't. I love dogs. I just
the
don't
American Kennel Club event is coming up.
I see
Madison Square
there
Garden.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. They have new breeds of dogs and everything. Didn't we talk about that?
I think we mentioned it. Sure. It's a very important story. Joanne said, Rosemary, no surprise that the only individuals who stood up to Trump so far are women, Yates, Collins, and Murkowski. Does anybody ever hear the name from Arizona? Anybody ever know that senator over there?
You're talking about McCain, but she does have a point. She does have a point. Women should be standing up and above everybody else because he represents an existential threat to us. He's opposed to every policy that women stand for, reproductive rights and equal pay. And
I understand Alan's point, but McCain has not said he's going to vote against DeVos.
No, he has
and
not.
And those women are standing up against one of the few women that he's putting in his cabinet, too. So, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay, Simi says, let's talk about Simona. Okay. Let's talk about Donald Trump's word salad speech for Black History Month.
Oh, my God.
My 2-year-old is more eloquent than this buffoon. Joe?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well,
friends are printing that, the full speech, which is very short. They're printing it on Facebook because you almost have to read it to see how incoherent and self-absolved it is.
For those people, I'm sorry.
Well, there are
people who don't remember what this is all
about. There are two issues. He spoke. There was a breakfast yesterday morning with featuring Ben Carson and Omarosa. I just want that to sink in. Mm-hmm. And that was the Black History to kick mm-hmm. off Black History Month. And he made remarks. The headline to come out of the remarks was basically saying that Frederick Douglass was basically made him sound like as if he were still alive and still relevant. Let me just get the here's the quote. During this month, we honor the tremendous history of African Americans throughout our country, throughout the world, if you really think about it, right? And their story is one of unimaginable sacrifice, hard work, and faith in America. I've gotten a real glimpse during the campaign. I'd go around with Ben to a lot of different places I wasn't so familiar with. They're incredible people, aren't they, Ben? I want to thank Ben, who's going to be heading up HUD. That's a big job. That's a big job, not only housing, but it's mind and spirit, right? I'm going to go after.
Can
where
you do
he...
it in a Trump voice?
No, I can't. I'm very proud that we've had a museum on the National Mall where people can learn about Reverend King, so many other things. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I noticed. Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, millions. More Black Americans who made America what it is today. Big impact. I'm proud to honor this heritage and will be honoring it more and more. So then... kudos to the reporter, by the way, and I don't know who it is. I try to find out. But kudos to the reporter who asked the question during the briefing yesterday to Sean Spicer about Frederick Douglass, assuming that, and I don't know that I would have assumed this, but assuming that he felt, it seems that the reporter was taking it for granted that perhaps Spicer didn't know that Frederick Douglass mm-hmm. was dead. So he said, could you please elaborate on Frederick Douglass's accomplishments?
And his answer was...
And Sean Spicer basically said, I think what the president is doing is highlighting people who are making a contribution, and he will continue to highlight those contributions as we go on. Next question. It was. Yes. Hey, what did the letter writer say? That was troubling. It was
that
quite.
That letter has already disappeared.
Okay,
I'm
my
so
apologies.
Sorry.
That's it. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Julius, who writes almost every day, so where does Pence fit into all of this? Trump appears to hold Kellyanne Conway in higher regard than our elected vice president, at least according to who is in his inner circle. Well, I don't know. Anybody?
I don't know. We don't know, do we? But there have been a lot of vice presidents who really have very little impact.
They're barely invited in. Although he is there.
It does seem to
be almost every moment. I think
he's like a Cheney, don't you?
Well, no, Cheney, I think, was running the show. And you do think
I think he's like a Cheney, don't you?
No. You think Pence is running the show?
I think he has a lot to do. I think Bannon is.
Yeah, I think Cheney and Bannon.
I think Bannon and Reince Priebus, however you say that guy's name.
Well, and
I think they're working very closely.
This is a whole other subject, and we'll talk about this tomorrow. I didn't find enough information on this. It is sort of breaking this morning, but there's a whole restructuring of the communications department that's happening, that giving Kellyanne Conway more power, allowing they're directly looking at the rollout of the immigration ban and how that was mishandled.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is trying to get Reince Priebus a little more oversight in trying to foresee some of these issues along with Kellyanne Conway. So there's a little restructuring going on, and we have to find out a little bit more about it as far as what that means as far as titles go.
Here's a critical letter from Karen. Stop reading so many letters and discuss the news of the day. I tune in to hear intelligent discourse and not to hear poorly written emails.
Oh,
thanks, panel.
Dear.
And Rosemary, love your list of PO'd countries. Okay, so Karen, you really don't think that when we read a letter and the whole panel checks in on the letter and has a substantive discussion as to what's going on, that that's not exactly what you're asking for?
Including your letter.
You wrote a letter.
I love the listeners. We have really smart listeners.
Yeah, we read those letters. Sure. That's right. Kathy says, when Milo Yiannopoulos spoke at the
Yiannopoulos.
I'm still working on the cheese.
When Milo
Yiannopoulos.
When Milo Yiannopoulos spoke at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, he displayed the name and photo of a transgender student on campus to mock her. That's why he's dangerous. I have no doubt, Kathy, that he's dangerous. My only issue is, do you let people decide and see that he's dangerous?
No, he's a cretin. I mean, no one's saying he's not a very gross human being, but like I said earlier, he's just become a lot more famous than he was prior to this whole thing.
James says the Australian government says that it will never accept refugees who attempt to arrive by sea. This policy is meant to deter refugees from attempting a long and dangerous voyage from Indonesia to Australia, where many refugees have perished at sea. I have no information about the number of refugees except by Australia who have arrived by air. And that's an interesting point, because we have to remember that we have in the United States Trump, who came on with a strong nationalist, anti-immigrant approach. We see it happening around the world, where Marine Le Pen may actually win an election in France as a result of this. So if you're the Australian Prime Minister, do you go against that current, or do you stick with it? Yes, no.
Yeah, that's a good, interesting point. It does seem, though, from what Rosemary is saying, that this is kind of a long-standing Australian policy.
Yeah, no, it's a good point.
Yeah.
Chris Churchill should stick around and change minds more often.
How many times are you going to read that letter?
I keep putting it back in the bottom of the pile.
I knew it. I knew something was going on.
Here it is again.
Is it just possible that it's from more than one person? Is it possible?
No.
Yes, it is.
Chris has fans.
Yeah. Susan says, the only way to get leverage against the Trump oligarchy is to speak their language. Since we've lost the chance for power, the other part of the equation is money. Boycott Exxon. Think about it, friends.
I've been boycotting them since they dumped all that oil in Alaska and didn't clean it up right, and it did the Exxon Valdez, and it still hasn't done any good.
And Keith says...
Rex Tillerson, by the way, was confirmed yesterday, 5643, something like that, whatever that works out.
Yeah, he got some Democrats to vote for him.
Yeah.
Good morning, panel. Yesterday, I changed my voter registration from independent to Republican so I can vote against Faso in both the primary and the election, should he make it. I'm opposed to Faso voting against the environment and relaxing ethics against oil companies' bribery rules. But the best thing I did yesterday is become a monthly sustaining member of WAMC. Well, it's really interesting how much money is coming in as a result of this. I got a letter this morning, gang, from somebody who said, you guys are taking advantage of the Trump win because you're getting all of this money. Well, how do you answer that? This is probably the most effective way of protecting your First Amendment rights by coming to WAMC. I don't get that. What are we supposed to do, apologize for that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have to, if there is a threat, you have to look at it and address it. I don't know how you not do that. And if that's seen as taking advantage of, I mean, I think that's just being prudent.
Good morning, panel. Have you noticed that one common thread in Trump's ascendancy has been his connection to big oil? Here are some of them. Putin, Tillerson, Dakota Access, oil pipelines, fracking. We should have taken the oil. Most of his cabinet appointments, in other words, Texas governors, Koch and Koch brother connections. Although this is in his area of business, do you think this is ideological or just represents venal self-interest? What are the implications?
We'll let that hang out for a moment. One more letter, and then we're going to wrap up with a lockbox reminder.
Okay, yes, we will. I'm going to read Tina, who is an original legislative gazetteer.
Oh, okay, great.
She said, "All marginalized, the power of Democratic resistance, all marginalized, outvoted, powerless groups started with resistance. They not only lost votes, but they lost their lives. It's called principle. Of course the Democrats should resist, despite the voting numbers. They should take a lesson from the people in the streets who have been so disillusioned with a weak, passive party." And thank you from Tina. Thank you, Tina.
I just am... It's fruitless protest. I would like the Democrats to come up with a strategy that uses the numbers they do have and would be more effective than just saying,
like,
we don't like Trump. I don't know. I'm not in the legislature.
What they need is a strategy to win back seats.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because that's what's really going to matter in the end.
Win back marginalized, gerrymandered seats that state legislatures.
That's not true in the Senate. I mean, those are...
It's not true in the Senate, but as I said before, there are a lot more Senate seats that the Democrats control up this time, which is bad news for the Democrats. Anyway.
We'll be back with more conversation tomorrow on the roundtable. And for our panel, I just want to remind you that the lockbox is open and need you. We are over $590,000, which means that we just need a little under $40,000 to go to make our goal of 633.
And to get that extra $10,000 from the Janie Fund.
That's right.
Very
generous. And that's a $10,000 challenge that we don't make. We have until Monday to do it, but it would be great to do it today. We could do it by the end of the show.
Absolutely.
WAMC.org. Don't forget, we've got the challenge on the line, so please do it. We had an amazing day yesterday. If we have an amazing day today, things are looking good. We're all $133,000 of that, and why the lockbox total was upped was so that money could go into a First Amendment fund to help us protect this radio station. There's a First Amendment t-shirt for $100, a First Amendment mug for $100. You can get both for $150. WAMC.org, but whatever you can do is essential. WAMC.org.